This is Dr. Jay Corsandi, and you're listening to The Best Night Ever, the show that's dedicated to helping you get your best night's sleep. Over the last 20 years of treating patients, I've worn many hats, including dentist, engineer, psychologist, artist, corporate executive, and more. I've found that the key to success, health, and longevity lies in sleep, and that's why I created this show. I want to teach you how to make sleep your best friend. Join me on a journey to uncover cutting-edge science, life-changing tips from renowned experts, ancient and modern sleep secrets, game-changing routines, and lifestyle hacks that will educate, inspire, and ultimately help you get the best night ever. Hey everyone, welcome back. And I gotta say that I'm really so grateful that I get to share so many interesting stories and people with you. And this episode is no exception. Today's guest has an incredible story of pain, trauma, addiction that culminates in a transformation that you have to listen to believe. I'm speaking with Ryan Evans, and you can find him at Ryan, the Holistic Health Coach on Instagram. Now, if you saw pictures of Ryan from a few years ago, you'd swear you were looking at a different person. This is a guy that went from being a bodybuilding beast to a yoga teddy bear. His perspectives on life in general and awareness and fitness and health have all changed over these last several years, and I'm so excited to share them with you. For those of you longtime listeners, you know I love to geek out about biohacking technologies and sleep. And we talk a little bit about that on this show, but we took a bit of a tangent and really went down some rabbit holes of awareness, meditation, breath work, morning routines, sleep routines, fitness, gut health, and a lot more. It's funny because a lot of my shows, we talk about technologies and supplements and gadgets that cost money, but we actually chatted after the show and we realized that every single thing we talked about was actually free on this show. So if you're looking to learn more about yourself and make easy yet powerful changes, you're going to want to listen to this show. And speaking of this show, it was brought to you by me. And if you find it helpful, you can help me with a quick review or pass it along to a friend who you think may benefit from this information. As always, you can also reach out to me on my Instagram at sleepbiohacker or my website sleepbiohacker.com. And without further ado, on to the show. All right, we are live. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jay, buddy.
I'm so excited to have you on here. We've become good friends over the past several months online on Instagram, going back and forth with posts and all this stuff. And the more I learned about you and your journey, the more I got excited and the more I wanted to share it with people who listen to my show here. So for those listening, can you kind of give me a little bit of your past and how you've gotten to where you are now?
Yeah, sure. So we'd go with the short story rather than the really in-depth long one, but so I'm from London originally, was brought up in quite a rough area when I was growing up, sort of lots of knife crime, gun crime, lots of drugs and drink and lots of really sort of negative environmental stuff. Had a few really quite bad incidences happen to me as I was growing up when I was really young, which then pushed me down this road of trying to protect myself. I started to learn martial arts and started to go down the MMA route and jiu-jitsu, and building a better body for myself to protect myself. So I got into bodybuilding, strongman, and I started to just build this big armor facade of myself, you know, to protect myself that I was brought up in this environment beforehand. Once I got into my later years, then I realized that wasn't really serving me very well. I started to have a lot of health complications and I started to really struggle with like my mental health as well. And I found that I was really, even though I was trying to protect myself and push people away, I was losing that connectivity from people. So it was actually counterproductive in the end as I got older. And a lot of my friends in the bodybuilding world were starting to, you know, die, really. Heart attacks, kidney problems, suicide, going to prison. That's probably just in the last few years. And it was something that I just felt like I needed to change, you know. And the catalyst for that was my mum got bowel cancer, which started my journey into looking at gut health and how I started to then study gut health at university and study going to dietetics, which I did. And yeah, it sort of opened up this big can of worms in regards to health and all the things I thought I was doing being healthy. Even though I looked healthy on the outside, I had a, you know, body fat percentage of 3%, and I was doing modeling, and I was on calendars, and I was doing all sorts of this stuff. I wasn't actually healthy at all. I was, my cholesterol was through the roof, my triglycerides were really bad, my blood was probably like honey. It was like, just, I wasn't healthy, you know. I was pumping more hormones into me than they put into a racehorse, and I wasn't good. I wasn't feeling good. So I started going down this path of nutrition and studying throughout my university degree and stuff, of learning actually what it needed to be a healthy human being. And I realized the more I went down this path to be a healthy human being meant I needed to connect more back with my roots, meaning back more with nature. So then that took me down the path of learning about biohacking and learning about how to hack my Western world into a more of a new natural source, I guess. So how to connect myself back with my natural environment. Yeah. Sorry.
All right. So yeah. No, that's a great story. And for people who don't know, I mean, you shared it on your Instagram, which is a great channel, by the way. And I was blown away with the amount of trauma that you've been, you know, I've been through a lot lately. And when I saw what you've been through, I was like, oh my God, you know, this guy's been through hell. But I'm happy to say that, you know, you are just killing it now with what you are doing. And we'll get into some of that as we go on through this show. Just a quick question too. So you grew up Englishman, but you're in Australia now. How did that happen? Is that part of your journey to connect more with nature?
So yeah, I was brought up in London, obviously, like I said, and then I moved to Wales. So I was actually trying to get more out into the countryside as I was living in the UK. I didn't realize I was doing that, but as I can see now through my journey, I was actually getting more out of London and more into the country. And I was living in Wales for a while. And then my partner is from Australia, and she moved over and lived with me in the UK for about a year, got extremely depressed because of the lack of vitamin D and the lack of being able to go outside. Because when it is cold and windy and rainy 10 months of the year, you don't want to go outside and connect with nature. You don't want to go out and do things. You just don't. It's just, you want to cuddle up in bed and you want to sit by the fire and watch TV, you know, and eat food and hibernate. But when it's constant for a whole year, you know, her habitat is Australia, which is sun pretty much all year round and nice warm heat. So she moved back and I was like, right, okay, I've got to get my stuff together, packed all my stuff up and then moved over here. Never been to Australia before, just moved. And luckily enough, we live in a really beautiful part of Australia. And yeah, it's the best thing I ever did. So beautiful here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fortunate as well. I live in Los Angeles, so I have the same sort of benefits of nature and sun and ocean. What would you say for people who do live in the UK or in those, you know, Scandinavia countries where it is challenging many months of the year? How can they benefit? How can they get better? Or are they already that they're just engineered to live that kind of in that climate?
You know what? I'm not going to speak for all British people, but I think a lot of British people do struggle with the culture there. It's very, very different than in sunnier countries, I've noticed. Because the more I've gone to live in sunnier climates, the people's mentalities are very different. British culture, they're all on top of each other. And it's very aesthetic. It's all about tits, ass, and abs, you know, and how much makeup you're wearing or how much money you're earning, like we spoke about earlier. And it's, you know, it can be a bit of a struggle. So I think for those people that are struggling mentally with that sort of side of things, they need to start hacking. And that was what I started to do.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and we're going to talk more about the hacking anyways as well too. First thing I'm going to talk about as well is the fitness, because you are someone who's very versed in fitness with the coaching that you do. And I've seen your pictures from back in your bodybuilding days. How has your perspective on fitness changed over the years now that you've kind of gone down this journey?
Great question. A lot. It's changed a lot. So my first thing with fitness was all just about looking good and about looking, you know, being big, being intimidating. And so I didn't have to deal with any of those negative things that happened in my past, you know. So I sort of made myself to be nice, big and strong. And by learning that stuff, like learning that protocol of fitness and bodybuilding and strongman, I learned a lot. I learned a hell of a lot. I learned a lot about biomechanics. I learned a lot about strength training, learned about how to build muscle correctly and what that was involved and physiology, etc. But I think nowadays I realize that fitness is a lot more wider and it's more about doing what's right for your body and what's going on in your life at that moment in time. So either that could be, you know, doing more fitness-based stuff or doing more bioenergetics or Qigong and Tai Chi and yoga. And, you know, and if you want to do fitness stuff and more fitness weight training stuff, do stuff, but counteract that with some more, I call it working out and working in. So with the working out that we do, like the stuff where you get your heart rate nice and high, counteract that with the working in. So calming that central nervous system and doing more sort of Tai Chi and yoga to calm that nervous system back down. So fitness has massively changed for me now. I think it's very individual to the person.
Fitness, you know, for me has changed as well too. Like you said, you know, in the years ago, I would be in the gym just running on the treadmill like a rat, you know, just trying to get 45 minutes of cardio in and then lift some weights and call it a day. But these days it's more about balance. Like you said, it's about, you know, the working out. I do love that analogy because you got to balance the two. And it's like, I just did an episode on heart rate variability, and it's the same idea. You want to have flexibility on both ends. You want to be strong, but you also want to be, have this inner peace and quiet as well too. So I think that's a good approach. You're known these days online as the holistic health coach, right? So what does that mean? If someone's coming to you, what are they looking for?
The whole approach. So when I look at holistic, it's a terminology of being working on the whole, the body, the mind, and the spirit, you know? So we can't just work on the body, which is what I did for a long period of time working with clients. We also need to work on their mind and their mental space. And also what really is, as woo-woo as it sounds, what their soul sort of is looking for, and really doing a bit of that soul searching as well and that inner work. So when people come to me, they're sort of looking for the sort of whole package in a sense of working on their health from every angle. So from nutrition, gut health, sleep hygiene, you know, nasal breathing, every sort of hack that I've learned along the road and working it out to their individual and their environment and their lifestyle and their background, you know, so.
Yeah, I can appreciate that approach. I mean, again, in the past, on my own journey, I would go to a health club gym and I'd get a personal trainer and they just work my ass off and that would be the end of that, you know. But I think there's a lot more to it. Like you said, there is age, weight, cultural background, maybe geographic background, sun exposure, diet, religion. I mean, whatever you can think of that could affect this person's ability to function, then you take that into account and then you come up with a package. So to speak. Yeah. Something that's been very of interest to me lately is gut health. And we've talked about this before as well too. I've been trying to focus more on repairing, I'm sure, years and years of gut trauma. What's your take on gut health? I know you've done a lot of training and education in it. Why is it important and what should we do?
Oh, well, gut health, I believe, is the epicenter of our whole organism, of our body. I said this on a recent podcast that I think that the gut is our first brain. I believe it's our first brain. Just because our brain is the one that consciously thinks us, I think that we think that is the one that gives us the most information and gives us our thought process, but all our neurotransmitters and hormones and everything else stems from our gut. 90% of our serotonin is made in our gut. You know, our hormones are regulated in our gut. How we digest and detoxify is through our gut. So, and it all starts in that big chain, you know, from how our stomach acidity works, our microbiome health, our diversity, and then how we're, you know, digesting food and utilizing it properly. And if that is compromised, which most of the people that I see on a day-to-day basis, it is compromised because of the, you know, the Western culture that we live in nowadays, it's a constant battle. It's a war with our gut. Our gut is so important. Mental health, you know, the biggest aspect of it all.
What would be like a couple quick tips you could give people if they wanted to start paying attention more to their gut? What are some quick things they can do?
Things that don't cost any money, things like fasting. We can all fast, you know. I recommend women do it differently than men, just through hormones, etc. But we can all fast. We can all do that. We don't need to constantly bombard our digestive system with constant food all the time and exposure to toxins. So having a fast, you know, even if you just want to do a 24-hour fast once a week or every now and then, that's going to hugely benefit your mental space, your gut, and your inflammation levels, growth hormone levels, testosterone levels. know, the list goes on what, how much it actually does for our body so fast, and start to know and symptomize what's going on with your gut. So when you're eating certain foods, how are you feeling? What's happening when you're having those foods? What's going on in your body the time that you're consuming food? Don't just think that constipation, diarrhea, and bloating is a sign that
it was a tasty meal.
You know, that's what I mean. And people do that. People just constantly are always bloated and constipated or have really bad, you know, stools.
Yeah. It's amazing because for me, and we've talked about this before, you know, people ask me what biohacking is. And I say, well, you know, all the tech and gadgets and all that is great, but it's awareness first. It's realizing what's going on before you start doing things to fix it or hack it or whatever. I know, you know, I went to school in Chicago many years ago, and that's the home of the deep dish pizza. Now, this is 20, 25 years ago. And we'd be eating those and studying for classes. And I never thought anything of it, but I knew that, you know, things weren't right in my gut, you know, the bloating, gas, you know, lactose, the gluten, all this stuff. But I just went about doing my thing. Had I known what I know now, I think things would have been a lot different. But that's part of the process of learning all this stuff, right?
Yeah, 100%. I think awareness is the goal. That's what I tell all my clients is awareness. Just become aware. You don't need to fix everything today. You don't need to fix everything now. Just start to become aware of what's going on within your own body, not what some expert has told you that is going on. You know, and with biohacking, I think the only reason we start biohacking is because we're trying to fix something in the first place. So that's that awareness that you're talking about, Jay. You know,
yeah.
So once you become aware of your sleep is bad, which I'm sure you'll be aware of very quickly, you start to look at ways around it. Now you either go down two routes. You either go down the medical route on the Western world of taking medication, or you go down the route of trying to find out the root cause of why your sleep is not optimal or whatever biohack you're trying to work on.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's the gut. It's just very complex.
The gut is complex. I've been able to optimize a lot of things so far, but the gut has been a tricky one for me. And I've been doing a bunch of different protocols, and fasting is one of them. It's funny because when I mention fasting to some people, or I'm sure you say it as well, they go, oh my God, I'm going to die if I don't eat in 24 hours.
You know? Yeah. The biggest reaction I get, you know, so.
And the funny thing with me too, is my patients that come see me who have sleep problems or they don't know, they come in and say, you know, I wake up exhausted. I feel like the sleep didn't matter, but I feel like I sleep fine. Well, yeah. There is a disconnect there, and you have to first identify that. And then you could say, okay, let's do something about it. But if they come in and say, you know, I sleep fine. I don't know what you're talking about. My wife made me come here. And then we test them and we see these crazy, crazy numbers. They're stopping breathing 50 times an hour. You know, hey,
yeah, well,
pay attention, mate. You know, speaking of awareness and gratitude, for the people who say that they can't wait for the summer or they can't wait for the weekend or to find that special someone or lose that weight, do you feel like they're missing out on the present while they're waiting for this future?
I think you already answered that. I think that that's definitely what they're doing because they're striving for the next best thing. We're always striving in this Western world of happiness when really it's about contentment and being content with what you've got going right now. It doesn't mean you need to be complacent. It just means that you are more content with what's going on and present with your day to day rather than constantly looking for the next thing that, you know, when we get to the weekend, I'm going to be happy, or when I get this expensive car, I'm going to be happy. And when I have this girlfriend or boyfriend, I'm going to be happy. And the thing is, I think people are starting to realize once they get into their later years that these things aren't making them happy. And actually the moments, the awareness and the moments that we have are the things that make you happy. You know, spending time with your kids and the moments seeing them grow up and spending time with them is more of an experience and of awareness and contentment than anything else, which brings on its own joy and happiness from that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's crazy because, you know, I've heard that saying years and years ago. People are like, well, as you get older, you know, things change and your definition of happiness changes. And I really wouldn't have paid attention to it. But now, as I've gotten older, it's like, okay, you know, maybe they were onto something.
Yeah, maybe we start sounding like our parents.
This is true. It's crazy, isn't it?
We do. We start saying the same things as them.
It's unbelievable. Let's talk about meditation. And I've done a couple different episodes on this. It's something that I have been doing a lot more recently. It's something that you do as well. What are your thoughts on it and how has it helped you?
I think meditation for me was the biggest catalyst and game changer for everything in my health. That is what brought the awareness on for me. Mm. That is what really got me to be able to connect with what was going on in my body, in my mind, in my mental state. And what I felt from meditation was that it brought me a sense of clarity and serenity that I couldn't get from anything else. But it was difficult the first few times I started meditating all those years ago. It was, you know, doing it right, that perfectionism, Western world, doing it right. My thoughts aren't, you know, I've got thoughts still in my head. I'm not like a monk yet. Why am I not like a monk? Why am I not sitting there all serene? But the thing is it is a process and it's a practice. And I think your intention behind why you're meditating needs to be there first. You know, I think it's the biggest thing that anyone can do is sit with yourself daily.
You've done a 10-day Vipassana, right?
Yeah, 10-day Vipassana. That was pretty intense for me. That was extreme. Yeah.
I mean, I do a 10-minute one and I'm pretty extreme. But I've had a friend of mine that I mentioned to you too. He goes to a cave in Thailand and in darkness for 10 days with nothing but water. And I go, that's extreme. But I don't know, maybe there's a deeper level of trauma that you maybe needs more attention if you're doing stuff like that.
I guess it's the intention of why you're doing it. Like for me, meditation now is taking off layers of myself and understanding myself more. So when I was in the 10-day Vipassana and I'm doing 10 hours of meditation a day from 4 a.m. till 9 p.m, you take off those layers very, very quickly. And when you're not talking to other people or even making eye contact, you've taken all distraction away from your life. And then everything comes up like your friend does in a cave. That's the ultimate, that's probably the hardcore level. That's what Buddhist monks will do for 3 years, you know? So like, that's pretty extreme, but a lot comes up and either you can deal with it and work through it and let it heal or not.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's a matter of navigating the stuff that comes up, which I've noticed as well too. And, you know, once I sit down, close my eyes and, you know, the thoughts start coming in, it's, you know, what do you do with it that really matters? Do you sit there and focus on her? Do you learn to let it go and move on? So, oh boy. Okay. We're getting a little deep there, but let's pick things up a bit here. Something that I do a lot of as well too, and I see your post as well, is breath work. And that's been a more positive thing for me. And it's something that I've gotten into the last about year and a half, 2 years. Are you a fan of like this Wim Hof style or deep breath work? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I think there's many, you know, Wim Hof is a form of pranayama and stuff. These ancient yogic breathwork techniques have been around for years, but he's just brought it to light with science, which I think is a lot of what the West is doing, bringing that stuff over from the East. So I'm a big fan of the Wim Hof stuff, and he's made it very fashionable and normal for people to be doing this sort of breathwork out in public and not look weird. So I'm very grateful that he's done that. But yeah, no, I love breath work and what it does for the body. But I'm a big fan of the Oxygen Advantage and Patrick McEwen's work and about CO2 retention. And I'm looking into more and more of that stuff over the last, you know, couple of years. And yeah, I'm a big, big fan of breath work.
Yeah, me too. I've been doing it. It's crazy because the more I do it, the better I feel. I mean, it's just so fundamental. And if I'm able to get it done, especially in the morning, the day tends to go by better. I mean, maybe it has to do with the intentions. Like you said, back in the beginning is you set the day up. And I remember I try to say this every day, every morning is, you know, today is going to be a great day, no matter what. And even on the day that my dad died, I said, today is going to be a great day, no matter what. And it was rough and it's been rough, but I still do it every day. And even if it's a bad day, at least I've set the intention. And more often than not, things are better that day. So I know we talked a little bit about bioenergetics and intentions and the universe and quantum fields and things like that. What do you think about that kind of stuff? Does that play into your daily practice?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I do my breath work in bed in the morning. When I first wake up, I do my affirmations. So I listen to 10, 15 minutes of affirmations, either my own that I've made and pre-recorded or YouTube. So I'm starting that day when I first woken up and was still in that brainwave state that it's more acceptable to taking in information rather than thinking about all the stuff negative that's about going on in your life or what you've dreamt about and how that's made you feel and all of this stuff. You can have these affirmations that start your day in a nice positive mindset and you start to build those new neural pathways of positivity rather than grabbing onto the negative you're grabbing onto the positive straight away. So before I've even stepped foot out of bed, I will do my affirmations in the morning, followed by two rounds of breathwork, maybe one round of breathwork, depending on what I've got on for the day. Mm-hmm. Then I'll do meditation actually in bed. So I still haven't got out of bed for about 40 minutes yet. So I wake up early so I can just do that in bed. I'll go and grab my phone. I don't have my phone in my room. And I'll go and grab my phone and I'll just listen to a few of the affirmations. I'll do some of the breath work. I might do some box breathing. I'll do some meditation. And before I've even really started my day, my brain is like, yeah, I'm ready. Like, I'm ready for this. Like, and it's in a really good positive mindset. Rather than going, waking up, maybe had a bad dream, or maybe had something else go on the night before, and then starting this day on this negative feedback loop.
Yeah, checking your emails, texts, the news. That's all the stuff that people say, you know, what should I do in the morning or in these morning routines? I go, last thing you want to do is pick up your phone and start looking at all the nastiness out there. I mean, I think your morning routine is spot on, setting yourself up for a fantastic day. So I'm going to actually take some of those tips. I got to do some of these affirmations. That's on my list now.
Yeah. Record some of your own, you know, make your affirmations like they've already happened, like gratitude and stuff that is for you and your intention behind it. So then you can record it and listen to those and then give you a bit of time for you to say them back out loud or in your head. You know, you might not want to wake your partner up shouting out, I am positive, but you know, like it gives you a head start on the day. But like you said about the social media, like I do social media detox every single week. And I'm a big, big advocate of fasting my phone and my food once a week.
Yeah.
Give my body and mind a complete rest. My body from digesting food and my mental state from constantly consuming and comparing myself to others. So definitely.
Do you do those on the same day?
Yeah, I do them both on the same day. So I fast my food and my phone. So once a week.
And same day of the week, every week?
No, different. Depending on how I feel. Depending on when I feel that my body needs it. Otherwise, if we become too rigid with these days that we're going to do things, we can put more pressure on ourselves. And I feel that, you know, life isn't like that. We have things come up. We're not going to just do a 24-hour fast when we've got a really busy day with the kids and we're doing loads of stuff with work. We need to use our phone. So pick a day in your week. We can always find a day in our week to time in our week to fully let go of all of that. And I spend that time connecting more with my partner, you know, spending more time present with her, not constantly checking my phone and going for a walk in nature or doing a bit longer meditation. And
that's a fantastic suggestion. And I'll admit it, you know, I spend too much time on my phone. I think we average, my phone tells me I spend 5.5 hours a day messing with it, picking it up, you know, hundreds of times. And I can see there's many occasion where I've got my kids and they're just looking at me, looking at my phone, and I feel terrible about it. And you know, I need, and I've told myself I got to back off, you know, drop the phone, put it away. I'm going to try more of these phone fasts. I've already done the food fasts, but the phone fasts, I got to do it. You know, obviously, yeah, I'm busy with the practice, with patients and businesses and all that. But like you said, you just have to identify a day where we can kind of step back and reconnect with what's important.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. What's important to you. Like, remember, like when we are constantly looking at our phone, we're always constantly looking for that dopamine hit. Always constantly getting that dopamine. And I see so many people with dopamine deficiencies because they're constantly needing that dopamine hit from their phone. Or then they get off their phone, then they go on their laptop. Or they get off their laptop, and then they go on Netflix, and then they go on YouTube, and then they play video games, and they're constantly going back and forth with this constant dopamine hit.
Yeah.
So like when I said to you about the detox that I do once a week, I also do that daily though, because I fast from 8 p.m. till 12 p.m. the next day, every day. So yeah, when I fast, I lock my phone away and I don't use my phone during that time either. And that's every day. So some people can't get hold of me for 16 hours, but that's normally why I'm asleep. And it gives me a good break away from it, you know?
I'm going to do more of that. I'm going to pair the food and phone fast.
Do you fast daily, Jay?
Yeah, I fast just about every day, intermittent fasting, same thing. I'll try to stop eating around 6 or 7 p.m. I'm a little bit earlier, and then I won't have lunch. I'll skip breakfast, or I'll have like a kind of like a bulletproof fatty coffee, and then I'll have lunch around 1.
So perfect. Just chuck your phone in a box for like till the next day, till about 10 a.m. and have your coffee and look at your phone grounded outside.
Yes.
Rather than being on it, you know, all the time. We just, you'll be more present, definitely.
I'm in. I'll keep you posted on that one. So we talked a little bit about morning routine. Anything else that you would recommend people do in the morning to get their day started, or something favorite that you do?
Well, I mean, when I posted my morning routine, I've had 5,800 people like that thing, you know?
Like, I know.
Pretty extreme. And I think people love the idea of a routine. And I think, firstly, don't put pressure on yourself for a routine. And I stack a lot of mine together. So like my affirmations, then my breath work and that's all like in bed most of the time. And then sometimes I will add in gratitude whilst I'm in having a cold shower. I'm grateful for the shower. I'm grateful for, you know, waking up in my house, or I'm grateful for everyone being healthy in my family. I'll do a lot of those together. So I think when people are building their own morning routine, find the things that they really want to manifest in their life, and then add the ones that are suitable for their lifestyle. If they're waking up first thing in the morning with the kids, they might not have an hour because they've gone to bed when they've wanted to relax after the kids have gone in bed. They want to be up a little bit later. So that's understandable. So maybe pick the things up that are going to be sustainable for you and your lifestyle and where you really want to be. So if you want to be more present in your day, less anxious, less overwhelmed and less stressed, then maybe a 10-minute meditation would benefit you more than, I don't know, say doing the affirmations. So it depends on the person, the individual and their lifestyle. In the West, we all want an equation to happiness. And when I think that's why my morning routine done so well, is because it was like, well, this is the miracle morning routine. You're going to feel amazing when you do this. And it's not necessarily like that. We have to pick out the things that suit our day and how we're feeling, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, we're all looking for that secret formula. You know who Ben Greenfield is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, he's notorious for talking about his routines, and his routines are extreme. And I've tried to do some of them, and I go, well, this is just not sustainable. It doesn't work for me. So like you said, you got to pick and choose what's going to be the best for you. It's kind of like that, you know, East meets West or functional medicine, you know, finding a root cause or a root meaning of why you're doing what you're doing. And with that said, let's talk about sleep routine. No, but let's talk about sleep actually. And I know that you are a big fan of it. We've had a few Instagram lives as well too about it. What are some, let's not say routines, but let's say, what are some helpful hints or tips or tricks that people can do to help them with their sleep?
Okay, let's talk about a recent client of mine. So this client of mine is very overwhelmed at the moment, struggling with a lot of anxiety and a lot of stress. They've got a very high, fast-paced job. They're working nonstop. They've got 3 kids. They're nonstop moving. They are very fast-paced lifestyle. They're very in what they call in the East, a very yang mentality. So very do, do, do. So in the evening, I try to wind them down and get them more into a yin flow. So that means turning and dimming the lights down, putting candles on, starting to turn the TV off and start opening up a book. Go and run a nice hot warm bath and put some candles in there, put some magnesium flakes or magnesium chloride in there. And then whilst that's running, go into a dark room, a nice warm room, and do some light yin stretching or yoga. Stretch out those hips, stretch out that psoas, move that pelvic floor. That's what I'm asking this client to do. To, you know, they spend a lot of time seated in that internally rotated position. So getting them to release some of that tension from their psoas and their hips is really going to help her nervous system to relax and calm down. And then maybe, you know, do 5-10 minutes of meditation in the bath when the bath's done. You know, don't fall asleep, obviously, so I'm not condoning that. But, you know, it's about hacking those things together. So I'd have her in the magnesium bath and do a 10-minute meditation in there. And then after she's done that, let her dry naturally so her body can regulate the temperature, which I'm sure you've probably talked about, and then go into that bear cave womb-like room. So completely blacked out, you know, I make sure she sleeps on a grounding mat so she's earthed. She turns all of her electric off. She has her phone on airplane mode, and she puts a little candle on next to the side of the bed, maybe does a bit of journaling or mind dump if she's a bit overwhelmed and stressed. So if she's got a lot going on in her day and a lot of things going on in her family, I get her to get all of those thoughts and emotions and feelings out of her body and onto paper and trap it onto paper. So it's out of her head. So she doesn't get hit the pillow and all these thoughts start coming up because she's been doing nonstop all day. This gives her the opportunity then to get that out of her brain onto paper. After she's done that, read a book that's lighthearted, not self-help or self-improvement, where you've got to constantly compare your life to that life, you know? Read something that makes you smile. Read Harry Potter. Read a nice fiction novel that you're going to enjoy. And then, you know, say when you go to bed, you know, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to have a great day. And this is the thing I'm asking her to. And there's no such thing as perfect. It's just progress. She works towards that. And she's feeling already a lot better. So I thought it would be better if I used a study with someone rather than my own personal routine.
Yeah, no, I like that. And I guess it has to come down to the person being willing to do stuff like this. Because if you mention, you know, candles and magnesium baths and lavender and aromatherapy, some people might be like, you know, no way in hell am I doing that.
Yeah, cool. Of course, like if someone told me to do this a few years ago when I was a 120 kilo bodybuilder, I would have been like, I just laughed in their face. But yeah, it's individual, you know, like it's definitely individual. Some people are into it, and when that people are anxious and they're having panic attacks all the time, they want to try anything. And if it makes them feel good and they start to feel really good in their day and they feel relaxed and they go to bed and they have a good night's sleep, they've put meaning and the power of suggestion behind that, what they've done. So again, it's that awareness that we've been speaking about all the way through this.
Yeah, it is awareness and intention. Yeah, if you're going with the mentality that it's going to get better or I'm going to improve, it'll tend to get better. Same thing with people who come here and say, well, what if it doesn't work? Or what, you know, well, the fact that you just said what if it doesn't work means that you are assuming it's going to fail or you're going to fail. So first step is to, you know, recognize what you're thinking about and maybe flip it around and say, well, what if it does work? Or what if I do improve?
I think you hit the nail on the head there, Jay, with what if. It's normally a very anxious mindset. So it's what if this happens? What if I don't get to work on time? What if I lose my job in this COVID crisis? What if? Rather than you said then, what is actually happening? What is going on right now? Change the what if to what is. You know, what if is make-believe. What if hasn't happened? No matter what you might think is going to happen from previous experience and memories and past, it hasn't happened. You have no idea what's going to happen. So you can just go into the thing, it might work, it will work. You know, and it will work if you want it to work.
Yeah, I had one of those situations this week where I got some communications and I started going down this whole rabbit hole of what ifs. And It was a terrible day. It ended up being just super traumatic, super triggering, super stressful. And at the end of the day, there was nothing that happened and nothing to show for it other than, you know, half of my day was completely ruined. So it's something that I'm working on as well too. I saw this saying and I want to run it by you. As someone who's been through a lot of trauma, and I've recently been through a lot of things as well too. This saying was very interesting for me. It says, everyone you meet is dealing with something. And I think in my past, I may have not really paid much attention to that. But, you know, and these days, the more I go down these routes of, you know, the world is after me or why me or what this whole shutdown and lockdown and, you know, it's all this machine that's out to get me. And that feeds this whole negative feedback loop and anxiety. And I think a lot of people are going through this. And what are your thoughts on how we can navigate this better?
I think what you mentioned there was, what if this all happens to me and what if this happens and all of that? So I think that's that victim mentality, you know, that's this is all happening to me. And that's very common with people with trauma. And I believe, well, I'm pretty certain that no one comes out of childhood without trauma to some degree. It doesn't necessarily mean that we've all had dramatic, horrible experiences. It could be that our parent is dealing with something emotionally throughout our younger years. So that makes us feel that our needs aren't met. So then we grow up with that sense of abandonment throughout that period of our life. And that's a traumatic experience for a child. Or we have an incident happen at school where all kids laugh at us. That's traumatic. I think it's changing the dynamics of the word trauma, you know? So I think learning our triggers and learning what's going on within us. And again, if we're, this whole conversation today has been about awareness, but once we start to become aware of our triggers and these traumas and what we're saying to ourselves and what we're thoughts we're thinking and what we're actually, how we're speaking to people, we can start to become aware of that and then maybe change that before that happens. And that's with meditation for me. That helps me in that process. It helps me to give me a bit of a head start on my thought process or what I'm saying. How am I speaking today? Am I speaking in a positive mindset or am I speaking in a very monotone, cathartic voice? You know, like how am I speaking? And I need to be aware of that because that will change my vibrational energy, you know? So we know that, you know, when you're around someone, when they're down, you can definitely feel it. You can definitely tell they're down, their shoulders are rounded, their tone has changed, they're going through something. But when you see someone that's upright, shoulders back, feeling good, smile on their face, the vibrational energy massively changes. And now the whole world is going through this huge emotional shift because we're all in lockdown. We're all dealing with demons now because we haven't got the distractions that we normally would do. So all these things are coming up to the surface. And we're having to deal with all these past traumas, and this victim mentality is really coming out. But then that's also a lot to do with the media. You know, the media is putting on a lot of, they want people to be victims. They want that fear and that stuff. That's, you know, I won't go into that stuff, but that's sort of why people are starting to feel very victimized because of what's going on in the world at the moment. We're all giving off that vibrational energy. So it's down to us now to change that vibrational energy so we feel good during the day, and that moves on to other people.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, I see people these days, they're all frazzled and anxious, and I try to come with some presence and some positivity and trying to be upbeat, but you know, there are people that will bring you down, and that's the tough part of it, is navigating that and trying to be there for someone, because you know, at the end of the day, everybody is dealing with something and you have no idea what it is. I mean, people will say, you know, I just lost a loved one. I lost my job. Just got into a car accident. My son has cancer. I mean, there's just so many variables that could be going on behind what that person is presenting with. And I'm, you know, trying to be as empathetic as possible to these, to everybody. And I feel like the more I can be present and the more we can receive, the better we can make this world.
Yeah. And I think a lot of emotional dumping going on, Jay, you know, like emotional dumping, like you just said, a lot of people putting stuff on you, their stuff, and they make you feel bad. And that's just emotional dumping. That's setting boundaries, though. Sometimes we've got to set our boundaries up between people and what we allow them to do. Like, you know, if I've got a friend that's dealing with something, I will put myself out there to hold that space for them, you know, rather than just let them emotionally dump on me without me being ready for that. Because if I'm dealing with something and then they emotionally dump on me too, that's another layer of emotional stuff I've got to then deal with. So I sort of, you know, it's all well and good to be empathetic to everyone around us, but that's a lot of energy we're giving out. And we've got to like work on ourselves then in the evening to really get that energy back within our bodies. And we can only work on ourselves, work on filling our own cup of happiness. We can't keep filling everyone else's cup of happiness up. Otherwise, we're going to have nothing to fill up with. So we have to work on ourselves before we even think of helping other people.
Yeah, that's a good point. And for someone like me who's been, you know, in the medical service industry for 20 years, yeah, my job has been to please others as much as possible, as effectively as possible, nonstop for 20 years. So it's challenging because...
Or maybe fix others, Jay. Maybe your thing was fixing.
Fix others, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And help others. And, you know, at some point, you got to help yourself. That, I guess that's what I'm trying to get to.
Exactly, mate. Like, I think when we go into that fixer mode, it all becomes about the patient, the person that we're trying to help rather than our own stuff. So we sort of start to forget ourselves. Yeah. How many doctors do you know in this sort of field of work that maybe we all do in this world that where they don't deal with their own stuff, so they get ill because they're dealing with everyone else's stuff? And we've got to really work on ourselves. You know, it's not selfish to work on ourselves first. We've got to do that. You know, Buddhist monks will work on themselves individually in retreat for long periods of time and years of compassion training before they go out into the world and give off their message. So you won't ever see a Buddhist monk on YouTube unless they've done serious work.
Yeah. You know?
And they've already worked on that stuff themselves, and then now they go and give it out into the world.
I love it. All right, so we're going to get closer to the end of the show here, but I got a couple more questions for you. First one is, if someone came to you and they said, I want to get better at everything I do, what would be the three things that you would tell them or suggest?
I want to be better at everything that I do. Wow, good question. You've got me here. Stops there. So my thing would be, the first question I would probably ask them, if they said, I want to be better at everything I want to do, is I'd go, what are the three main things that you want to actually improve on in your life first? What are your goals? What is it that you actually want to improve on? Without awareness and goals, like, what are we actually focusing on? What does every area of your life mean to you? So I think that would be my first answer. I would want to know what it is, the areas that they want to work on. Is it their sleep? Is it their mental health? Is it their illness that they're dealing with? Or is it their, you know, gut health? Whatever it may be. Nail down those three, and then we've got a beeline to where we're going to head towards. Then two would be meditate. Become aware, because the more awareness we have, the more we can start to figure out the things that we feel that we need rather than want. And thirdly, work on your gut health. Work on your gut health, because if you work on your gut health, it will work on every single area of your life. Because if you haven't got the energy and the brain capacity and the mental recall to do things in your day-to-day life, you're not going to be able to fix the first three things that you really wanted to change in your life. So you need to work on how your body is digesting food, how you're detoxifying, and how your body is utilizing that energy properly and your microbiome diversity to be able to fulfill your goals and your passions and your legacy and whatever it is that you're looking to do. You can't do that with a bad gut. You just can't.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. It's like having a Ferrari and just putting junk gas in it. No, if you want to have the, you got to match them up.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't. Like, we live in a very toxic society nowadays. You know, we're constantly being bombarded with antibiotics, pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, glyphosate, GMOs, you know, toxic makeup, deodorants. You know, we put aerosol cans, deodorant. I've done that for years, putting aerosol can deodorant on my skin, and it says flammable on the back. It's like, why did I think that was okay? And it's mad. And our gut's got to deal with all of that.
It's crazy. Again, back to the whole awareness. I mean, we should call this one the awareness episode, but yeah. I was trained as a dentist, and for years and years and years, even in school, I was putting in amalgam silver fillings. And then for years I was taking them out and putting in, you know, white fillings and fluoride and fluoride in my toothpaste and then, you know, deodorant, same with you with aluminum and all of these conditioners and soaps and every, you know, the water, unfiltered water. I mean, you can go on and on about all the toxic load that my body has taken, vaccines, you know, all that stuff, EMF. I mean, these days it just goes on and on and on. So it is about optimizing the body as much as possible, proper food, proper water, proper sun exposure, nature, grounding. All of these things are the only ways that we're going to be able to mitigate all this craziness.
Well, yeah, my like you're saying about that, the toxic load that I put on my body from my years of hormones and drugs that I took throughout those years, I had a stool test done a few years ago when I was actually going down the process of correcting my gut, and I had no good bacteria. The first they've ever seen, like, in a long time. I had no lactobacilli, no bifidobacterium, zero, not 1%. I killed all of it off. So I only flourished in bad bacteria. I had an extremely leaky gut. And I was struggling really bad with my mental health because of that. And it was only the fact that I'd done a fecal microbial transplant on myself that I corrected all of that, you know, and I corrected all my gut problems, and my dysbiosis was no more, and more my gut bacteria was good. So it was actually because of that that changed everything for me. And then that was when I started to take a turn on all the toxic load that I was putting on my body and try to mitigate some of the damage that I'd done for so many years.
Yeah, crazy. What is the future for Ryan Evans?
Bring awareness to people.
Oh.
Bring awareness and help people where I can and get my message out there to as many people as I can. That's really what I really want to do. I really want to help others and realize their true potential and what they can do and get them as healthy as possible. And that means in every sense, and in a holistic sense, in a whole sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And for people who want to go down this journey with you, where can they go to learn more about you and your services?
Instagram's probably the best bit, and that's Ryan, the Holistic Health Coach, really. I put loads of my stuff up on my stories, and there's loads of stuff saved on my highlights, and I try and put as much information out there as possible for people.
Yeah, for people listening, his Instagram is off the charts. Lots of great content, infographics, inspirational quotes. I mean, you've got the whole lot on there, which is fantastic. I love sharing your stuff as well, too. And your before and after pictures of all your clients. Unbelievable stuff. So well done, mate. I'm very impressed and very honored to be able to hang out and learn from you as well, too. You've helped me and you continue to help me. So I think that's a good place to call it quits for this show. I mean, we could go on and on, but we'll save some more for round two, perhaps down the road. But this has been awesome. A little bit different than what I was expecting, but it's all good. Ryan, thanks so much, mate. This has been fantastic.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Jay.
Cheers. All right, folks. Thanks again for making it all the way to the end. I really hope you enjoyed what Ryan had to share. I know I'll be taking many more phone fasts and paying even more attention to my gut health after speaking with Ryan. If you want to learn more about Ryan Evans, please check out his Instagram. It's Ryan, the Holistic Health Coach. And as always, I'd love to hear what you thought about the show. If you post it to your Instagram, please tag me and I'll be sure to see it and share it. You know, you can always find me at my Instagram, which is sleepbiohacker, or my website, sleepbiohacker.com. And that, my friends, is the end of the show. See you soon. And as always, I hope you do have the best night ever.
This broadcast is for informational purposes only. Statements and views expressed in this show are not medical advice. The show, including Dr. Jay Corsandi, the co-host, guest, and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of any information contained herein. Opinions of the guests are their own. We do not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests, nor do we make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. If you think you have a medical problem, please consult a licensed physician.